You're listening to the Sound Atlas.
Hey, I'm Captain Dean, and welcome to another episode, this time being broadcast, taped, and recorded at the Little Fox Bakery on Main Street in downtown Bowling Green, which is where, back in the day, this was the roughest part of town. If you don't know anything about Main Street history of Bowling Green, you need to look it up. It's pretty exciting stuff. Very Wild West, if you don't know anything about it. But my guest is the lead singer of the band People Proof, Summer Graves. Welcome to the Sound Atlas.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
It is great to be here. I told you earlier that I've been wanting to record an episode at the Little Fox Bakery, and you even brought it up. And I was like, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Let's meet there.
It's such a nice little spot to have a cup of tea and a cookie or a cupcake and quaint.
And it's much nicer than what the old days of Main Street used to be.
Oh, I'm sure. No Wild Wild West here.
It really is. I mean, I mean that sincerely. I read a book or something about Bowling Green history, and it talks about this particular strip. Where we are sitting today was where all the saloons were and all the whorehouses and whatever.
Wow.
You want to go into. And it's like this was the roughest part of Bowling Green, which explains why a block from here is the jail and the police department and the courthouse.
Fair,
I mean, we're really in the thick of it right here. But Summer, I appreciate you taking your time to meet me down here today. You are the lead vocalist of People Proof.
Yes.
And leading up to the recording of this episode, I've heard your name from so many people. So musically speaking, from this music scene, you guys are making a very powerful impact right now.
Yes, it's very exciting. We're definitely striving to bring a new sound to Bowling Green.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of influence of punk music, shoegaze music, and just basic rock music, and we kind of mesh that all together. My bandmates have been in other projects in this city for a few years.
Okay.
And so we kind of came together and
a mutual love for music, obviously.
Yeah.
We will touch on all the wonderful stuff, but we cannot begin this without asking, where are you from?
Okay. I was born in Gallatin, Tennessee.
Okay.
I grew up in Scottsville. My mom and dad separated when I was young, so I was kind of, I moved between Scottsville, Kentucky, Franklin, Kentucky, and Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Okay.
Quite a few times.
But definitely floating around the southern central area of the state.
Oh, yeah.
State line area.
Oh, yeah. So I usually just say I'm from Bowling Green.
Right. But you've been in this area for pretty much a while. I mean, Gallatin's not that far.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's always been like Middle Tennessee and southern Kentucky have a very good connection anyway, so
mm-hmm.
People just kind of hover around here.
Yeah, I've gone all around this area. I went to all the high schools. They were all kind of different, too.
So growing up, what got you into music and what was an influence on you?
Well, my first big impact from music, I guess one of the first music memories I really have is when I was 6 and 7, around that age, my dad ran a salvage service, kind of like a freelance car towing,
mm-hmm.
and he would fix up junk cars and sell them. So he would be in his garage all day, and I would sit in there with him, and he would constantly have on everything from AC/DC to Nirvana, mm-hmm. Santana, Lynyrd Skynyrd. That was the kind of stuff that he entered. That was kind of like the first music I really remember sitting mm-hmm. and bopping to at a really young age.
Now, was that radio, or did he like have
he
CDs?
He had CDs, and,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's
and he
cool.
had tapes, too.
I think most of the time you think of it like a garage or something. They usually just have a radio in the corner, but he actually was DJing his own sound.
He had, it was like the first time he found one of those like 6-disc changers,
yeah.
and he got the big speakers. That was like Christmas in my household because he loaded it up with all his CDs. Yep. I remember there was a Guns N' Roses CD and a AC/DC CD, and it would just rotate through.
So the classics were there growing up for you.
Oh, yeah. I really, actually, another one of my earliest memories, he had this CD. It was a compilation CD. It was called Flashback to the 70s, and it had...
That's like Freedom Rock in the 80s.
Yeah. It had... I don't remember everything it had on it, but I do remember that it had a Pink Floyd song on it, and I remember getting off the bus and putting that CD on a lot of times while I would do my homework. It's really dorky, because I also would put on, like, Dixie Chicks.
Right.
My dad had a Nappy Roots CD I remember listening to sometimes.
Hey, all nothing but love for Nappy Roots.
This
is right here.
I know. It's weird to think about that because it's easy to forget.
Yeah, they really exploded in like the, I guess it was the late 90s, early 2000 era. That band really took off. I mean, they were on MTV and they were like the first, I think, major hip-hop band to come from this area. There's been others. There's been a lot of various bands in that genre, but Nappy Roots was really one of the first to come
from
here.
They were like top 40 hits. Yep. They had one really big song.
And they were always
from the
good
album,
about staying...
Watermelon Chicken and Grits.
Yeah. Man, you're taking me back. That's a long time ago. But you're obviously a 90s kid, correct?
Yeah, I was born in 1993. I'm 25. I'll be 26 in August, so I'm still considered a baby, I guess.
You know, you're there. At that point, I mean, I was, you know, living the life by the time I was 25.
Yeah.
That's it's good times. Something. Takes me back. I wish I was 25 now. So growing up, hearing a variety of music, obviously, with the CDs in your dad's shop, and, and you did get a taste of some local music, like you said, with Nappy Roots and everything.
Yeah.
What else stands out to you around that time, and what kind of led you in the direction of discovering that you... do you play an instrument, by chance? I meant to ask you that.
Well, I don't like to say that I play any instruments because I'm not very good at
but
playing
you fiddle around,
any of
right?
them. I fiddle around with drums and keyboard. My mom played piano. That was another inspiration for me growing up. My mom played for her church off and on, and she tried to teach me some things when I was pretty young. Mm-hmm. And so most of the music knowledge I have is from piano chords. Like, she kind of taught me how to read sheet music. And then when I went on to be in choir in elementary school and middle school and high school, I read sheet music for that. So, I don't really play, I've tried to play guitar. It's kind of difficult for me. I never could stick with it. I would just say my instrument is my voice.
That's true. And that's what you are.
Yeah.
You are the lead singer of People Proof, obviously.
Yeah.
What discovery, I mean, you just mentioned you were in choir in like elementary school. So I'm assuming at a pretty young age, you were like, I like singing. I'm gonna sing.
It started with singing in church and singing in the car on the way to church. Mm-hmm. My mom, she always has been very into gospel music, and she, since she played for her church, she also sang, and I guess I just, it just, I never thought twice about it. It just was a thing that we did.
Yeah.
And I always loved singing. It always felt kind of like riding a bike or something.
Right.
It's just really freeing to sing, and it's a really fun way to express yourself.
Yeah. And obviously you're quite good at it.
Yeah, I'd like to think so. I'm no Mariah Carey, but you know.
Well, you know. Who is? when you got into like choir and church, I mean, outside of those worlds, which obviously you're going to be singing standards, you're going to be singing things that are in books and You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When did you kind of discover your own voice, and what were you influenced by? What were you listening to?
Well, I guess I would have to say, this is kind of tough. I guess.
Because, I mean, there's like, so much. And by the time the 90s, by the time you were growing up, I mean, there was so much music to choose from. Style-wise, and,
yeah,
you know, sound-wise, and vocal ranges, and just a huge plethora of stuff.
I guess I had always sang, and I had always sang at church and in the car and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I never really thought about the idea of performing until I was probably about 15. I went to school in Franklin at that time. Mm-hmm. Franklin Simpson High School.
Right.
Shout out.
Go Wildcats.
I had a friend who was a little bit older than me. She loved going to shows in Nashville, and mm-hmm. she would often ask me to accompany her because it was definitely a different genre than a lot of her friends were really into. It was a lot of metal shows, mm-hmm. Or I guess what we called metalcore back then. Kind of embarrassing to reflect on now.
No, not really. I grew up in hair metal land, so that's something to be semi-embarrassed about.
Yeah. So I started going to a lot of shows with her on the weekends. We would go to Rocket Town.
Yeah.
We would go to the Muse, mm-hmm. which is now a Domino's Pizza.
It sure is.
Which is just strange to me.
Most of the best clubs in Nashville between like the 90s and early 2000s, they're all gone.
Yeah, it's really
the
sad.
The Springwater has survived. That's been there since the 70s.
Yeah, I've been like, to that one.
It's like the oldest tavern in Nashville or something.
That's
it's
cool.
Got a really cool history. It went through Prohibition, I know that.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I'll definitely
You need to go check it out. It's like the ultimate
out.
Punk rock club, the ultimate dive bar. It's Nashville's CBGB.
Okay.
It's in Centennial Park, so where the Parthenon is, it's like directly across the walkway from there.
Okay,
can't
neat.
Miss it.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
I'm gonna have to check that out next time I'm down there farting around.
It is a good club. I've seen some amazing shows there.
That's awesome.
You guys need to play there. I'll tell you that.
Okay,
so,
I'll look into that.
What bands did you see? Who were you seeing?
Oh my gosh, it's okay. Again, this is embarrassing to think about, but I saw a lot of all of the bands that you would say scene kids listen to, everything from Whitechapel to, we saw, I'm embarrassed to name any of them, like bands like Life Ruiner, The Acacia Strain.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to think if any of them are still big today. The first concert I ever saw at Rocket Town was Thrice, Circa Survive, and Pelican. And that was a pretty awesome show.
Yeah.
I was so young, I didn't really realize like how cool it was to see Pelican at that time. Like later on in life, I was like, what? I saw this band when I was just a kid.
Caught
They're
them
so
at the good
cool.
time.
Yeah.
That is cool.
Yeah.
So did that have any kind of impact on you of being like, I think I want to be a singer,
what,
but not in church or choir?
Yeah, definitely. I was like, you know, this is so cool. It was the first time I had been to a show where people my age were all over the place, mm-hmm. and they were just living life and enjoying the music together.
Right.
And it just kind of sparked a light bulb above my head, not just about me performing, but also just the community of it all. All these kids probably didn't hang out much outside of these places,
right.
but when they came together at shows, it was just like a whole different world,
right.
like a dream world they all lived in. And,
yep.
and
I went through that same thing when I was about that age of what age you were. I mean, I was starting to go to shows and that point, you know, Nashville had the End, and which is still there. There were a few clubs, and there was a lot of like outdoor shows I got to go to, And around that age of, you know, 15, 16, it's like sink or swim time.
Yeah.
You're either going to be a musician or you're just going to piddle around and make it a hobby.
Yeah.
So I think that's a crucial time period between like 13 and 16. It seems like most people I've talked to, including myself, that was the moment.
It definitely.
Where like, I want to do that.
Yeah. I was like, I want to be a part of this. Like, I want to be, I want a job working at a venue like this.
Right.
I want to play in a band on stage like this with people my age. Like, it was just like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this kind of world even exists. Like, coming from Franklin.
Yeah, exactly.
There was nothing
the
really
about,
going on there.
Living in Franklin, the convenient factor of Nashville only being like 20 minutes away.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when you live in Bowling Green, it tacks on that extra 20 minutes just to get to Franklin, you know. But I lived in Franklin for a short time, and that was the best part of living in Franklin, was how close Nashville was, you know.
I do remember.
Goodlettsville and Gallatin, all these little towns between it, you know.
Yeah. It's like, so not long after I started going to shows at Rocket Town and the Muse, and in all the shows that I went to in Nashville, I found out there was a show that was actually going on in Franklin at this place. It was a gym. It was called the Hard Body.
Yeah.
And this band now would be known as Demeanor. They were called Me and My Friend Cody. They were kind of like a grindcore band, I guess you could say. They played, and it was an all-ages show, and like people from my school were there.
Yeah.
And everybody was like playing basketball in between sets, and it was just like, what is going on? Like, I can't believe there's actually
basketball and grindcore in the same building.
was...
That just goes to show how the times have changed.
Yeah, it's really funny. They actually somehow got this band that was pretty popular back then called Gaza to play a show.
Wow.
And I remember the lead singer accidentally hit me in the head with a basketball, and I was terrified because he's literally like 7 feet tall, like,
oh, wow,
buff dude. I was like, oh my God, he's going to whoop my ass. And he was immediately like, I'm so sorry, I'm so sorry. And I was like, oh wow, you're actually polite. Like, it tripped
me out. The big scary people are normally the most
nice
kindest,
ones.
Most teddy bear people you'll ever meet. So was your first attempt at getting into music on your own terms?
So, okay, from there, let's see.
What's the time frame?
From there, I started going to shows in Bowling Green and mm-hmm. ended up moving to Bowling Green. And
what year was that?
By the time... this would have probably been about 2009, 2010.
Okay.
I remember going to the short-lived Arch Rivals that was here on the square.
Oh,
it was
wow.
a really cool venue. That
was super, super short-lived.
I know. It was so sad because
you're
yet
again,
it
even
was
brought
all
it up.
Ages.
Yeah,
I
totally forgot about it. But you're the first one that I've interviewed since I started hosting this that's even mentioned that.
Yeah.
That's how short-lived it was.
I know. It's sad. I talked to a person who was a part of it a couple of years ago, because I was like, what can I do to make this happen in Bowling Green?
Yeah.
We need another all-ages venue.
It's money, and you got to be able to pay the electric bill in order to have electricity for the amps to be plugged in.
Oh, yeah. It's a lot of work.
It is. And I talked to somebody the other day about how many places that used to be here, some of them are burned down, and some of them are just closed or
dilapidated,
done.
Yeah,
just they're usually just these cool old rickety homes that people, you know, it has a good run, you know, they have house shows and bands, and a lot of people cut their teeth in these things.
Oh yeah.
And make great connections, but then they grow from that. They start playing the venues, they start, you know, moving out of town and growing up, you know. And so
yeah.
But our town is known for having venues of that type of nature for years. I mean, way, way back before you were born, that stuff was going on here.
Yeah.
But it's kind of a Bowling Green tradition to have like house shows and venues of such things. Like we were talking before we started rolling about the Sinkhole Sanctuary and the Foya House, and a lot of these places are just
Manor is no more. It's like apartment buildings now. I used to live in the house across the yard from it. It was so awesome because we had went to parties there, and the band Sleeper Agent lived there, and they were moving out, and they were like, we need new tenants that are cool. And so I was living with Rory Willis at the time. He used to record a lot of the Bowling Green bands back around that time period, and we nabbed that house and we loved it. He recorded a lot of really cool bands there while we lived there, and we would walk across our yard and go to house shows at the Manor, and it was just like so awesome.
Well, back to that when you said that you moved here and started attending things. Like, who besides like Sleeper Agent, who were you seeing and where were you going?
I remember catching the tail end of Cage the Elephant when they were actually a Perfect Confusion.
Yeah, Perfect Confusion, yeah.
I remember some of the first shows I went to in Bowling Green were at the Bread and Bagel.
Yep.
And that was really cool. There was right before it was the Bread and Bagel, it had a different name.
It was Bread and Bagel years before.
Oh, okay.
And then it went through a few changes, I believe, of like restaurants and stuff. And then someone brought it back. And brought back Bread and Bagel. And it was actually a lot better the second time.
Okay.
But it was short-lived. But it was Bread and Bagel years and years ago.
Yeah. I wish I could remember some of the shows I went to.
But they did have some good performances there, that's for sure.
I remember seeing little Alex Lindsay in the band Bury Us At... I want to say they were called Bury Us At Sea. That was like one of his first projects.
I
was like, I can tell this kid's going somewhere. Mm-hmm. Now he's huge.
They're definitely going places.
Yeah.
What else stands out? Anything come to mind?
Let's see.
I'm trying to even think what was around 2009.
I know
the Manor.
I remember seeing the band Bears. They were a really life-changing band. Night Class, that was a huge thing.
Night Class closed
probably in 2010. I would say it was either 2010 or 2011.
It's been at least 10 years since that building got a remodel, which was Duck at the time, and now it's DSU. They've completely altered
It's like a freaking store where they sell Western t-shirts.
I was telling somebody the other day, I was like, because my band played at Night Class a lot.
Yeah.
I went to a lot of shows in the late 90s, early 2000 at Night Class. And the bookstore is in its place now. And if you walk in there and you used to go back in the day, you can kind of recall where things would have been.
Yeah.
But they did gut and remodel that whole thing. Because there was like an outside pavilion, like sidewalk thing or something.
Did they have the subway in there when you guys played?
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know if that was
thing. My first gig at Night Class would have been in the probably late fall of 1992.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. That's wild. That's so wild to think about.
Well, and I was telling, I swear, I'm recalling a lot of stuff with this conversation with you. My cousin's band played there, and it was filmed for like a movie that was made in Bowling Green. It was called Halloween, I think.
Okay.
It wasn't Halloween, it was Halloween.
Halloween.
And it was really poorly done.
Nice B-movie.
Yeah, it's like a student-made movie. But he was in a band that set up and played in Night Class, and they filmed the segment of the band, and it was like for the sake of background scenery for these two people to meet and talk,
Wow.
But that would have been in like 1989.
Wow.
So again, I was telling
somebody no idea
that Night Class had this moment. It seems like I've never heard people tell stories about Night Class prior to like 1987.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about it prior, if it was even there in the 70s or 80s,
Yeah.
Because it seemed like a lot of bands would play at Western would play on South Campus or South Lawn or Garrett Ballroom, Van Meter, like they opened for big bands that were touring. And they used to, you know, the local bands would play at campus, but usually in the better stages, you know, the better venues.
Yeah.
So Night Class was, I think, more of a late 90s to early 2000 thing.
I remember seeing this band, La Dispute. That was probably the last, one of the very last shows Night Class had. I might be wrong when I guess this, but I want to guess it was like 2010. I feel like I was still in high school maybe whenever it happened.
That sounds about right. And again, it was one of the only all ages kind of things that we had.
And it was so fun.
It was
because
great that
you're
Western
on
allowed
campus.
That.
Yeah. And it was just like a world within a world.
Yeah.
I mean,
there were moments
all the shows
where they tried
I went to at that
it,
age.
Or they would try to make it to where only student ID could get you in the door kind of thing. But they kind of did drop their guard and say, you know, on Saturday nights it can be all ages shows.
Yeah.
They found a way to make it work. I don't know how, but it worked, and it worked for a long time.
Yeah, thinking back on those the shows I went to at that age here in Bowling Green, it's just like I just thought it was magical. I never imagined that I would actually get to be a part of that. I always dreamed of it, but I was just like, I'm not cool enough to do any of this stuff.
And now you're in one of the coolest bands in town.
I'd like to think so.
Hey, believe me, you are. I'm telling you. I've heard your all's name more than I was telling you before we started rolling.
Yeah,
like,
that's super
everybody's
flattering.
Everybody's talking about the Daddy Sisters, and everybody's talking about People Proof.
That is,
like,
that makes my day. I mean, that really feels awesome.
It's true. Because
we've worked really hard. Really quick, I will also mention around 15, 16, there was a person throwing shows at a house. It was kind of out in the country a little bit. It was the Hammett Hill House.
Oh, yeah.
They would have some cool shows out there.
Yep.
And that's where I saw that band Bears, and they were so good. They were definitely one of my favorite Bowling Green bands. They didn't live, well, I mean, you know, they still live, are alive as humans, but the band itself didn't live too
right.
long after that, I don't think. I would say they probably broke up in like 2012, rough guess.
Right. Isn't it weird to say 2012 and be like, good Lord,
that was a long time ago. I know, it seems like it would, it doesn't seem like
I'm the person now at this age where I say 30 years ago and I'm like, oh wait, that wasn't 30 years ago. That was 45 years ago.
Oh, my goodness.
It's amazing how time has gone so fast.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So anything else stand out to you
around
that
age
prior to you even getting started into music or into bands?
I did love that Bear CD, and that CD was a cool one that kind of opened a lot of doors for me. When me and my friend Cody became Demeanor, me and all my friends were just like, this band is so cool. We were really into those bands and that little scene that lived. All those guys kind of just became adults and, you know, got real jobs, got married and had kids and the stuff, the regular stuff. So I guess I'll jump from there back into living with Rory and him recording a lot of music. And there was one night where we weren't super sober, and we decided that it would be fun to make a song. I want to say I was 16 or 17 at this time, and it was the first time I ever tried to record a song. I don't even know if I could find it anywhere now. We definitely had put it on I don't even know, I mean, that was before the time of SoundCloud and Bandcamp. I really can't remember what
MySpace and
I mean, it might have been on MySpace.
Reverb Nation, maybe.
I don't know if I could find it now, but we made this song called Like Fire, where I had sang, and we kind of just made like computer generated instruments for it. Rory made the background.
Was this your introduction into that world?
This kind of was. It was just a goofy, like, let's make a song. We made it, and I was like, this is so cool. Yeah. And I realized at that time, I remember me singing and him saying, you know, you have, like, a pretty unique voice. And, like, through a microphone, like, you have a good studio singing voice. And I was like, dude, you're pulling my leg. Like, I know I'm okay, but... And at that moment, I was just kind of like, maybe he's right. Yeah. Like,
you kind of have to step out of your own body and look at it from a third person's point
definitely.
Of view.
Definitely. It's like, dang, like, maybe I can sing. Like, so I think at that time... I kind of started making some little songs on piano that I would sing with, and I really never shared them with anybody just because they were pretty emo. It's kind of embarrassing, but...
Well, not really. I mean, that's how we all get started, you know? It's
yeah.
Like, you really have to just kind of do what comes natural and find your way through it, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure... everyone has that phase of, like, believe the first me, they songs do. They wrote are really corny. But that was the moment where it all kind of started as far as songwriting goes for me. Mm-hmm. And
what year was this again?
That,
around 2010, or is this later?
This probably would have been, yeah, probably right around 2011.
Okay.
I was probably
so long ago.
About, I know, it's like, I'm hoping I'm not messing up my timeline thinking about it, because I'm like, gosh, I was about 16, 17. That
right.
was when I really, I had always written poetry. I mean, it's wild. Like, I really never considered myself a poet, but my mom will find notebooks and stuff from when I was a kid. I wrote poems all the time
right.
throughout my whole life. It's funny, but.
So that definitely kind of. You know, snowballed into
yeah,
you
songwriting.
As a singer, yeah, singer songwriter stuff.
Yeah, definitely. So I'll fast.
That's cool
forward.
That you had that talent coming into this, because I think that's one thing a lot of people struggle with is that writer's block kind of mentality.
They go hand in hand for sure. Like writing, if you can write a poem, you can write a song pretty
yeah.
much. And poems,
I'm a firm believer in that. And if you can't play an instrument, you can at least write lyrics.
Yeah.
And give it to someone, and they usually can put music to it.
Yeah.
I mean, that The Doors is the greatest example of all time of how poetry and music can merge into a perfect concoction, you know? And
yeah.
when you look at that band, that is the, I would say, the epitome of what poetry and music combined from, you know, outside worlds coming together.
Yeah.
Blows your mind, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm sitting here like, wow. Never really thought about it. But yeah, I mean, they definitely are two in the same.
Right. So you're tinkering around with things, you're testing waters, you're getting started.
Yes.
What was the first, like, musical ensemble or band that you
so,
kind of got involved
okay,
with?
Okay, the keyboard thing is mm-hmm. a funny story. I don't know if I should tell this because, well, I mean, it's been so long ago, it doesn't matter now.
Exactly.
I wasn't supposed to say anything, but it's been 10 years, so I can say it. Rory had actually ordered a keyboard for himself, and it was late getting it. In the mail, he was supposed to get it a certain date, and, you know, 2 weeks after the suggested arrival date, it still wasn't there, so mm-hmm. he contacted Casio and was like, yo, I ordered this keyboard, it's not here, and they're like, oh my god, we'll send you another one, we don't know what happened, and they both ended up arriving around the same time, and he was like, like, should I return this keyboard? Like, are they gonna know they sent me to? I'm hoping he doesn't hear this, because he'll be like, why are you telling people this?
No, I'll back this up, because a friend of mine ordered a guitar from a musician's friend, and the same damn thing happened.
He got
two identical SG guitars, and they let him keep them both because they screwed up.
Well, we never said anything, so I'm...
But they screwed up.
it's on them, okay?
It's on the UPS van, really.
He let me keep one, and...
Not bad. Nice gift.
I know. I definitely was like, dude, please let me use one. You have two. Come on. You don't need two. You know, I was kind of childish about it, I'm sure. But he let me keep one, and he made me promise if he ever needed, you know, if the first one broke, then I would give it back and all
that. Got a backup.
So at that point, that's when I really was like, I can make these little songs. And that's when the little nerdy emo songs started. I would make really simple songs to sing over, and I would kind of do it backwards to where I would write lyrics and then I would go back and write music. I know a lot of people don't really do that, but
I do.
That's kind of how I started.
I kind of write lyrics first.
Yeah, it's funny because, like, as I grew as a musician and started playing with other people, I quickly realized that is not how most people do it. And I'm like, come on, can't you guys write around my song?
I'm a firm believer in there is really no rule book to it. You know what I mean? Like, people preach about music theory and this way, that way, or the other. And I've just always been like, I think when I first heard Beck, like, I was like, all hands, you know, like, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
There is no rules. Everything can be thrown out the window. Because, that did it for me. You know? That changed a lot of game. Like, you got to think about if you grew up in the time just a decade prior, you know, we went from listening to these perfect songs on the radio.
Yeah, the Beach Boys.
Well, that, but then in the 80s, it was this overproduced pop music stuff, you know, and everything was perfect. Everything was just literally wonderful as far as production. And then I hear the album One Foot in the Grave by Beck. And then I hear the album Stereopathic Soul Manure by Beck. And I was like, wow, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
You can write a song with an out-of-tune guitar. And if it works, it works. If it's good, it's good. And that's really when I discovered that music is what you want it to be.
Yeah.
And you listen to what you want to listen to, you know?
Yeah.
So I can relate to that.
Yeah. Okay, I was about
messed
to...
Messed up your train of thought.
I was going to pick back up somewhere, but now I'm not sure where.
Well, tinkering with songs of so that I guess later, I'll you know, you're just... looking back on it like... embarrassed about the emo stuff or
whatever.
Yeah.
I guess I'll just kind of fast forward from there. Not long after that time period, I had moved into a house with my now drummer Justin Swindle and my ex-boyfriend Will Cronenberger. The three of us got a house on Kenton Street, and Will was in a band at that time. Swindle was in a band at that time. Swindle was in a band called 16, and occasionally they would practice at our house, and it kind of led us to thinking, like, should we have house shows here? Like, would we be able to? Should we try it? Right. Like, because every now and then, he would have bands hit him up, because they kind of ended up being on a little label from Texas that was a pretty cool thing. And so, through that, they had made some connections, and we decided to attempt having a house show, and it went pretty successfully. And so, we were like, man, maybe we could do this once a month. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it's all ages. Of course, there was a lot of people, unfortunately, underage drinking and things like that.
I think that's why most house shows come to an end.
It is, and that's pretty much why we came to an end in the end also, unfortunately. But so for a short time, it wasn't even too short of a time, because we tried to space them out and not do more than like once a month.
Right. It's out of consideration of neighbors, and you don't want it to be so often that it does cause You know, right. I mean, you space it out just enough and it usually doesn't have any issues.
It was so cool at first because our house was right beside the Firestone.
So
people would just park in their lot after they closed.
That thing's been empty forever.
I know.
That is a good sized parking lot.
Yeah. So, I mean, parking wasn't an issue. And for a long time, it didn't seem like sound was an issue either. But unfortunately, after about...
There's always some old person around that's going to complain about the racket.
So the funny thing is, it was like 9 or 10 months into having shows, and the cops got called, not because we were too loud, but apparently there was like a domestic dispute going on across the street, and our neighbors were the people who were having the dispute were paranoid that the cops were going to come, so they called the cops on us, I guess, so that they could continue. And
smoke and mirrors kind of
it was just like what in the world.
Wow.
So after the cops came, you know, it was fine. They pretty much were just like, don't do this crap again. You're really loud, you know. And we were like, yeah, okay, sure.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Thanks for telling us after 10 months of doing
it. Right. This. It was just like, really? Now the cops are going to get called? It sucked. But it was like, well, we knew this might happen someday.
Yeah.
So at least we got some cool shows in. And one of those shows that we had was my first time ever playing a show. After we had a few, I had just worked up the courage. I was playing with a friend, and it was kind of like a the word that I'm trying to use is escaping me right now. Like a on the spot. What word am I trying to think of?
Improv?
Improv. Improvisation.
I had to think too.
Oh my gosh. I can't believe I couldn't think of the word improv.
Believe me, everybody I interview, they're like, I can't remember the bass player's name.
So I had a little project with a friend who is actually my partner and the guitarist of People Proof.
Right.
We had this little project called Hobo Pope. You can imagine what we sounded like just knowing that.
I love the name.
Yeah, so that was the first time I performed, and it was at a house show, and you know, there's probably like 13 people in the room. It was nothing huge,
but
it was so fun.
You did it.
It was so goofy and fun, and I was like, okay, this is not nearly as scary as I thought it would be, and I want to do this again.
Awesome. So how long did you do that?
That was the only show.
Oh, it was. It was under that name.
Yeah.
But you did do something else.
So,
after that, right?
Yeah. I'll dive in. I'll try to be quick. I know we've been talking for a while. I don't know how much time you have, but
they said we could stay if we go a little over.
Okay, cool.
Closing time. But you have a show to get to tonight,
I
too.
I do. So. I do still have to take a shower and stuff.
There you go.
You
got to get stage ready.
Yeah, I still haven't picked out an outfit.
But you did tell me prior to beginning this interview that you did do this project.
Okay.
Like a duo thing, right?
I'll try to run through this timeline kind of quickly. Okay.
Well, you don't have to rush it.
So
it's part of the music scene, so you got to capture the story.
So of course we attempted to have another house show after the cops got called,
right,
and we got busted a second time. And with that time, we got charges. We all got noise ordinance charges.
Okay.
And maybe another one that I don't feel comfortable saying because of, you know, the underage drinking and stuff.
Yeah, that sucks.
So at that point,
damn kids,
man, I know, it was so embarrassing when the cop walked up and like five people are standing on our porch drinking a beer and they just throw them in the bush and take off running because they're all, you know, 18, 19.
Perfect.
It's just like, great way to incriminate us,
thanks,
you guys.
Liz.
Thanks,
yeah,
friends. No, it was wild. And it was bound to happen. So at that time, you know, we were just kind of like, well, I ended up, I had met a friend at one of the shows who was playing in a band from Evansville, Indiana. And after a while, we started dating, and I moved to Evansville to hang with him. And when I got there, there was a venue opening called PG, and it was such crazy timing because, you know, with us booking house shows at our house for a decent amount of time, I had started making connections in the DIY world, and some of those connections didn't know about our house show house being busted up, and they didn't know I had moved and everything, right. But I would occasionally have people hit me up like, hey, I'm looking for a show in Bowling Green, and I would be like, well, I don't live in Bowling Green anymore, but I live in Evansville now, and there is this all-ages venue that I started working with. It was called PG, and I started booking shows there probably no more than 5 or 6 months after I moved to Evansville, and that venue definitely was the first place where I started performing, you know, real music, not just goofy improv stuff. The first person that I really was in a project with, her name is Laura King Neville. She's a great musician friend of mine who has played here in Bowling Green with me a few times, and she writes folk music, and the first time me and her met up, it was really such a beautiful, like, pure memory thinking back on. She came over my house, and she was, like, at this time period, she was, like, really just straight American songster. She was super influenced by the guy, oh, I can't remember his name right now, the guy who wrote the Camp Town Racist song, John...
Brian?
I can't think of his name. It's like one of the most famous songwriters ever.
When I hear folk and John, I think John Brian.
Not exactly, but anyway, maybe I'll think of his name before this interview's over.
It seems to happen with most people.
But it was just like one of the most classical American songsters ever that she was influenced by. And when she came over, she brought a washboard and she handed it to me. She played guitar and we just kind of went with it. And I was never like really huge into folk music, so I really didn't know what I was doing, but I had so much fun that I just went with it. And so she got an upright bass player to join us, and we kind of formed a little band. Unfortunately, it was kind of short-lived because she kind of wanted to go, like, her own route.
Right.
And just have, like, she... I think her and I both really loved to sing, and she wanted to be the main singer, and I kind of wanted to be the main singer, and so we just kind of... We in our separate ways musically, but at that point,
at least it was something.
Yeah,
you know, while it lasted, you both kind of learned from it, but then you also grew and moved on.
We played a cool house show in Henderson, Kentucky, with a bunch of bands that sounded nothing like us, but it was just like so. It was such a cool show.
One of the shows best like that. Because it's a variety,
mixed genre.
You don't have
shows.
Four bands that are all the same, you know?
Right. Mixed genre shows are some of my favorite shows because there's something for everybody.
There is.
And you get a better turnout that way too. But so I played music with her, and then at that point, you know, some of those goofy emo songs that I had been writing when I was 16 and 17, I had kind of carried with me in my heart, and I was working on those. And I started this solo project called Alien She, which I kind of took that name from a Bikini Kill song because I was super, super inspired by them. And I just wanted to be a cool punk person. Yeah. Like, I wanted to embody all my beliefs with my lyrics, since I couldn't really play guitar, so I just tried to pour feelings into my lyrics. So I played a lot of shows under the name Alien She. I also, I started a band with a friend of mine. I don't want to say the name because it's really weird, but we played some really cool shows. And then I was living with a really awesome sound engineer guy, and he also records a lot of bands in Evansville. His name is Brett Seiler. He's a really great person to know. I mean, also just like an awesome guy all around, like super nice. But he kind of had a sound studio in our basement, and he was recording a lot of bands. I found it so strange that like everywhere I moved, I ended up living with a sound engineer. Like, it was just like a roommate thing.
But
I don't
you
know.
You learned a lot from him, right?
Yeah, it was. I'm so lucky in that. I mean, yeah. I met so many awesome people.
That's great.
Along the way, and got to listen to a lot of really awesome recording sessions, and some not so awesome. But that's like
that's part of it.
That's part of it for sure.
It comes with the turf.
It was really funny. But so me and Brett started a band also towards the end of me living in Evansville, where I played drums and
nice.
I did, I guess you would call them metal vocals, and we were called Heavy Period, and Brett played like super wild guitar, and that was really fun.
That's
probably
cool.
One of my favorite bands that I was in.
That's
so
great.
So,
but you end up back down here.
I did. I lived in Evansville for 3 years. I was really heavily involved with PG.
I've always thought Evansville had a pretty cool music scene.
It does. There are
but
some
it's
really
kind of
talented people.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of the same. It reminds me of Bowling Green a lot in that there's a lot of talented people, but there's just not a whole lot of places
like
for them.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not necessarily like cliques, but it's just kind of like they're just kind of underrated.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I
like,
get that.
Not a lot of people know about them yet.
But you come back to Bowling Green, and
so
obviously at that point you were going pretty strong.
Yeah, it was really
in the music field, and you come back to this music scene.
And
settled in quite nicely.
It was pretty wild. I did not imagine to end up back here. But a friend of mine knew I was struggling, and she knew she could help me and also benefit from having me around. So she reached out and was like, you know, I'm going to help you, and you're going to just... it's kind of a long story. I'll try to summarize. She was going to help me out by giving me a car, and it ended up being that I needed a little more help than that. Not just... Well, the car thing didn't really... go back?
Forget everything you heard.
Okay, basically, my friend Mary Spar was helping me out.
Mm-hmm.
She said, you know what? Just come live with me. You know, you can stay with me for a while. Bowling Green is always a good place for people to come back to.
Right.
And so I was like, you know what? All right, I'll give it a go. So, you know.
So you lived with Mary over on Magnolia?
On Nutwood,
yeah.
I stayed with her for a while. I started working at Spencer's Coffee and kind of, you know, that's a really social place. So it was not too hard for me to integrate back into Bowling Green. And with me working at that venue for so long, I had made so many connections.
Right.
I mean, there were weeks where we had a show 7 nights a week.
Right.
Like, and it was awesome. It was sometimes pretty overwhelming because, you know, social life every night. But so I met
gotta have some downtime.
Yeah. Sometimes I would stay. It was weird because it was like, on the nights where I wasn't working, it'd be like, hey, are you coming to PG tonight? It's like, dude, I've been there every day this week.
Exactly.
But you would end up going back anyway because the show was going to be cool.
Yep.
So I came back. I got integrated back into Bowling Green life, and I still had a lot of people hitting me up for shows. And then I had the same issue where I was like, you know, people were like, can I get a show in Evansville? And it's like, well, I'm not booking in Evansville anymore, but I'm living in Bowling Green now. So I'm going to try to see if I can set you up something here. Mm. And I kind of went around to all the places that I had heard about to see which places would be good for me to book at, right, or which places would, you know, be best for touring acts to play. I had booked a few shows at Tidballs through my bandmate Kale. Mm-hmm. I booked a few shows at Rockies. I booked, more than anything, I booked house shows. Right. I had booked a show at Stiff's, The Sinkhole, right, for this really cool band from Chicago called Rat Boys. And they're doing so awesome now. They're really... they're like going to Japan and awesome. Europe and all this stuff. It's so cool to see
it is.
Bands
it's
that you
cool
book
to be, yeah,
get big.
Yeah, when you see your friends make it, that's always great.
So, yeah, I started getting back into the house show scene, and I was really mainly focused on all ages shows. But after a while, I realized that unless I started having shows at my own house, that it wasn't going to happen.
It's hard, yeah.
So, unfortunately, the floors of my old-ass house aren't really comparable for house shows.
50 people and a band.
So, we just kind of hit a dry spell. Mm-hmm. And in that dry spell, my partner and I guess I kind of left out, like, him coming to Bowling Green and us kind of falling in love and all that jazz. But that's not what we're here to talk about. So I'll just say that
that's
happened.
For part two.
That happened. And
so kind of in between the booking thing, the shows and whatnot, you end up getting back into your own world of music.
Mm-hmm.
And this was, again, not that long ago, right? Like a
yeah,
few years ago?
Yeah, I moved back here in the beginning of 2017. Mm-hmm. So Casey and I started dating in May of 2017.
Okay.
And he is a super talented musician, and he plays guitar and drums and bass and piano. He can play any instrument. I've always been really envious of his ability to pick up any instrument and just take off
and
with
find
it.
Something.
Yeah, I'm just like, you fucker. No, I'm just kidding. he's awesome. So
I feel that way about people that can play piano. It's the one thing I've always wanted to play, but I just physically can't do it.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel about guitar. I'm just like, my fingers won't do this.
The struggle is real.
So during the dry spill, as I like to call it, we started playing together. He would play drums, and I would play ukulele, or I would play drums, and
right,
he would play guitar, and I would always sing. And we ended up starting a little project together called Gottfried Mind.
Right.
And we played a few house shows in Bowling Green that were really fun. But we just felt as though we didn't have the right equipment to mm-hmm. keep going. So it
but
just
kind of...
But you
were also still kind of discovering new turf.
Yeah, I got a really cool delay box. It's a... oh my gosh, I'm blanking on what it's called right now. A DL4.
I'm not the guy.
Made by Line 6.
There
it's
you
like
go.
A green stomp box delay.
The guitarist in the band I'm in could tell you exactly what it is without even going any further than that.
Yeah, so I got a green
and he's,
DL4.
If he's listening right now, he's giggling his ass off.
He's like, I have one of those.
Well, he said something to me the other day. He's like, I'm listening to your podcast, and you don't know anything about equipment.
Well, that's not your job.
No, it's not. I know a lot about drums, but I don't know anything about, like, effect pedals and stuff.
I got a DL4. It's a green. It's such a badass pedal. You can do so much stuff with it. And I did what no one else probably... Well, actually, I say no one else, but I guess Reggie Watts uses it for kind of the same reason I use it, and that is to play with your voice.
Yeah.
And I started writing songs with it, and it really got me back into the zone for playing. And that's when I started doing this little solo project called Lilac Cell.
Right. Now, you'd mentioned that before we started taping.
Yeah. So that is kind of on the back burner at all times.
Just something to have, something to do.
Yeah. I don't really perform as that right now, just because I have so much going on with People Proof.
You certainly do.
And I hate that I've been talking so much that I haven't even gotten to People Proof.
Well, no, this is how this works. Seriously, it is a timeline, and it goes from the beginning to now. And
yeah.
We are here in the now.
Yeah, we're
you
getting there.
You are the lead vocalist of People Proof.
Yes.
And again, like I said earlier, this is one of the names that a lot of people are talking about around town. There's a lot of chatter going on about People Proof.
It makes me feel so flattered and excited.
Talk about People Proof. How did you all get together, and who is in People Proof?
Okay, so let's get down to business. People Proof is me on vocals. Casey Eaton is our lead guitarist, and Justin Swindle is our drummer. You may know him from 16 or Nolan. And then we have Kale Knight on the bass. You may
One
know
of
him.
Many bands.
Kale, yeah, you may know him from Full Frontal Saurus or Cigarette Smoke or the cartoons.
Or True Crime.
He was in a band that was really cool called Neutral State.
Yes.
Kale is a super talented
Kale
bassman.
Is awesome. And he is incredibly difficult to sit down and do a podcast with.
He's shy. He's also the person who recorded our album.
Yep.
He is slowly delving into the world of audio engineering, and he didn't do a bad job, if I do say so myself. So yeah.
Right. And as we're speaking, not that long ago, you guys had your CD release party.
Yeah, we had our release party April 11th at a house show on Regent's Street on campus.
And I was going to go, and I couldn't make it.
That's okay. I hear that.
And
a lot.
I think I sent you a message, or I sent somebody a message. So I was like, I want that CD.
Yeah, yeah. I should have brought one. Oh, you know what? I think I have one in my car. I can give you whenever
awesome.
We leave. Yeah, it was really fun. And
so how did the four of you get together? And it's not been that long, right?
No.
A year
so,
or less, right?
Okay, we... Initially, it started off with Swindle and Casey.
Mm-hmm.
Swindle, his name is Justin Swindle, but he goes by his last name.
Right.
That's just the thing. So, Swindle.
Cool.
I know, it is cool. Swindle and Casey were like goofing off, having some beers, and they wanted to play music. Because, you know, Casey is always down to play music.
Right.
And he found out that Swindle played the drums, and he was like, oh my gosh, like... we should jam. And so they started jamming, and they were like, we need a bassist. So actually, originally, they had taken David. I'm feeling like such a jerk. I'm sorry, David. I can't remember your last name right now. David works at Mellow Mats. Wait, no.
I have a hard time pronouncing his name, too. But
I just can't remember
David.
It. David's
from
been in...
Heron and Crane.
Yeah, Heron and Crane. He's a super talented bassist.
And I can never remember
his name. Oh, my God. I'm really sorry, David.
It's okay.
I know you. Like, I know you, man. We've been through it. So anyway, we started with David, and then I kind of crept in to practices, and I was like, man, I want to sing for you guys. Like, this is sounding really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And so from there, it was born, and, you know, we would practice once or twice a week. We were trying to learn new songs and put songs together, and David was really busy with a lot of things, and I think he was kind of really sad that Heron and Crane kind of didn't work out.
I talked to him after that all happened, and it was a difficult thing.
Yeah, because they were such a fun band. They were really starting to get their name out there. Yeah. But
it's a sore topic for me.
Yeah, we won't get into it.
I was like a huge, huge fan of that band.
Yeah, they're
so it's understandable that he probably was in that. Period of like, I don't know what I want to do. I don't even know if I want to play.
Yeah.
So I know he went through a time. We had many conversations.
He was really, honest with us, which was cool. You know, he kind of broke it off before we got too invested. Right. So Kale
came in.
Yeah, I was working with Kale. I was working surveillance at Kentucky Downs. Kind of weird, but I did that for a while. And Kale is still working there. He's a supervisor there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I told him about our band at work, and he had a lot going on because that was around the time True Crime was starting too.
Right.
But
another great band from here.
Yeah.
I mean, he has not touched anything that's bad.
I know. I'll give him that. I'm just like, dude, when are you going to be in a crappy band?
I mean, he should buy a lottery ticket every day because he's had golden touch with music and bands and just being at the right place at the right time. And
definitely.
He is an amazing musician and a fantastic inspiration.
Oh, yeah. I'm so lucky to have him as a friend. He's a great guy. So he was like, I want to hear what you guys sound like because I might be interested in doing this. And it was kind of almost like a pipe dream kind of joke at first. Like, we were all like, dang, what are we going to do? We got to find a bassist. But we were like, you know, we're not going to let that let us stop. We're not going to stop just because we don't have a bassist right now.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, Kale came over and we jammed, and he was just, he picked it up like that. I mean, just right off the bat. And he was like, all right, these songs are cool, I'm in. And it was just like, fuck yes.
Dude,
like,
that's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it was just like in a matter of a month, we had gotten it figured out.
Right.
And that was probably, I want to say that was in August when we were like, all right, we're a band now. Let's do it. Let's finish these songs that we started. Let's write some new ones. Mm-hmm. And yeah, by December we played our first show at Tidballs with the Daddy Sisters and
I remember
the Mighty Jabronis.
Yeah, I follow him pretty, intently to see what is going on, with whatever band he's playing with,
And, yeah.
I remember the first time I saw the name, and I was like, that's a cool name.
Yeah.
But you guys have really only been a hard-working, active band as we are taping this for about a few months,
Yeah, I mean, as far
six
as
months
being
or so.
Actively playing shows, it really only took off in December, and mm-hmm. we started recording our first CD in the end of December, beginning of January, and it took a while to get done because we're all so busy. We all work full time.
Right. Well, that's part of it.
And this was
the
first
thing is that
big,
you did it.
Yeah, we
and
did.
It got done.
We
that's
done
what matters.
Did it. this was Kale's big first thing that he really did all by himself.
That's cool.
So that's another reason why it took a while, because he wanted it to be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And if you know him very well, you know that he's a perfectionist a little bit.
Well, but not to the point of taking too long.
Yeah.
But he definitely knows how to dial it in and get it right.
Yeah. I'll give him that. He definitely doesn't mind spending the extra time to make something right. cool, which is not a bad thing about him at all, of course.
So, again, the band's only been really active for a short time, but you've made a pretty big impact in that short amount of time.
Yeah, we've
and
really...
everyone, again, the name is out there. Yeah, I hear it all the time.
I'm super stoked.
And as we're taping, you know, you have a show tonight, and I know that yeah. there are other things. So what's on the horizon as we are speaking for People Proof?
So we finished our first CD. Kale did that, and he got Jared McKinney from mm-hmm. Full Frontal Saurus to help us master it. And right now, our big plan is to just kind of sit on it for a while. We want to, you know, we got our shirts made, and we're working on getting some buttons made right now. We're trying to slowly get some out-of-town shows booked right. for this summer. We have a whole nother album that we're sitting on right now
awesome.
That we are kind of waiting to work on until we have more money saved right. up so that we can go like an actual studio this
right,
time.
But you don't want to push it too quick. Either,
yeah, we just got our CD
this.
Out. It's fresh.
You want to make sure people catch what you have.
Yeah.
What has started it, and then you go into the next phase.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
that's definitely, you definitely have goals and you have a map.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of laid out already.
We would love to go on tour, but unfortunately, because Kale is a supervisor, mm-hmm. it is kind of hard for him to get off work for more than like
yeah,
a day or two
that's
at a time.
Active weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Destination there.
Luckily, his days off are Thursdays and Fridays, which happen to be like prime show days.
That's
so
true.
That's played in our favor a little bit.
Yeah.
Our schedules are all different, which kind of sucks because it is kind of hard to get us all in the same place
but
at the same time.
It shows a lot in the fact that you guys do make time to get together and make this work.
Yeah.
You have not allowed anything like that to stop. This band
yeah,
from
I mean,
forward.
Even like literally the day we put the album out, Kale was moving into a new house. Like he literally just bought a fucking
That's
house, and we're still making time for the band. So.
Wow.
So that's a...
That says a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it means a lot to all of us.
Well,
and we're having so much fun doing it.
Doing a really cool thing. You're doing your thing, and you're doing it the way you want it to be done.
Yeah.
Before we get to the end of how I wrap all these up, the one question I do like to ask everybody is, what in this music scene is inspiring to you? What are you a fan of? And who are you going out to see on your own...
Okay, well, the one thing that's really, I guess you could say, kicking my ass to get out the door right now is the fact that, like I mentioned earlier, like we kind of had a dry spell,
mm-hmm.
and I'm feeling really confident that the dry spell is over for now, and so... I want to make sure that it stays gone.
Right.
So,
doing your part.
Yeah, I want to do my part. I'm really trying to talk to more people about other places that I can have shows
mm-hmm.
and book shows. I know that there is the people here in Bowling Green who want to come to shows, and I know that there's also a lot of people who aren't 21 yet who really want to come to shows.
Right.
So I'm hoping the more I get out and go to shows and play shows, I'll meet more and more people who feel the same way. And I think
they're out there. If there was someone leading the battalion, that's what it needs.
Yeah.
A leader. Someone that wants
my goal,
to make it happen.
My goal, my end goal, and you know, I say this, and I don't have any money for it right now, but I really want to try to open an all-ages venue, whether it be a nonprofit. I mean, I started looking into grants this year. There's a really cool foundation here in Kentucky called the Kentucky Foundation for Women, and
mm-hmm.
they provide art grants for women,
right.
but also men too.
I was gonna say anything involving art usually is a good stepping stone into music and art collaborations.
So cool. They actually, I believe that Miss Christmas next door at Art Matters has gotten a grant from them before.
They've had shows here at the Little Fox Bakery that we were sitting in, because I know that they've had like art shows and some performances.
Yeah, they have had acoustics, and they've had poetry readings here. So they're definitely not opposed to doing events. It's more catered towards like solo or acoustic acts versus full band.
Maybe we can help change that.
Yeah, I mean, I know they're open to doing stuff.
Yeah,
I've talked to Allie about it, and
you gotta, you know, let them know it'll be okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And help and participate in setting up and tearing down and cleaning up. They're like pretty open to it.
I don't mind picking up beer cans and stuff. I've done it before many a times. The Daddy Sisters is a band that I really love watching that is current. Wet Eyed Liars is a really great band from Bowling Green that's playing right now a lot.
Yep.
Waco Bell is really cool. I love seeing them. They've been kind of trying to not play so many shows, which is really smart because, you know, then when they do play shows, you're like, oh, shit, I haven't seen them in a while, so we got to make it out there.
Yep.
Spirit Week is a really cool band that I like to see. So those are just a few of the bands that are really making waves here.
So many.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I'm hearing about new bands all the time that I haven't even really gotten to see yet, like... you know, I just found out recently about this band called Aluxus. I don't really know what they sound like. I haven't really gotten to check them out yet, but they're playing shows here in Bowling Green. And, let's see, I feel like there's another one I'm forgetting about.
There's always going to be some.
I know, it's like,
but
dang.
That's the cool thing about our music scene is it's so diverse and it's constantly moving.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Sugar Daddy.
Yeah, Sugar Daddy.
Sugar Daisy is what I meant to say. They're a great example of a band that, you know, they started here.
Act. Sugar Daddy.
My apologies.
No, it's okay.
Oh, I knew what I was trying to say.
It's a lot to put in, though, when you have just a short time to do an interview and have all these questions.
I should have wrote some notes down.
Nah, I don't write anything down. I only write down the intro, and that's all.
Yeah, I never. I always kind of end up doing stuff on the fly. It's just how it always works.
Well, it's working good for your band. I can give you that because, again, you guys came together fairly recently, but yet it did, after what everything you've said, it did kind of lead into where you are today.
We are all really happy that we've gotten this much attention so quickly. I mean, we feel really lucky and blessed and really excited just to see, you know, where we go. We can't wait to play our first show in Nashville. I'd really like to get a show set up for us in Lexington and Louisville. I've got a couple of connections in Louisville with right now. And we played our first show in Evansville, in a basement, of course, about a month ago now. And that was super fun.
That's
we got
awesome.
A great... got great feedback, sold a little merch. So, I mean,
things are going good.
It's new, it's fresh, and it's just starting.
And it's moving.
Yeah, I can't
That's
wait to
important.
See what happens next.
Well, Summer, I appreciate you taking the time to meet me here at the Little Fox Bakery
I've been nibbling on this chocolate chip cookie, like dying to eat it throughout this whole interview,
I really appreciate your time, and I appreciate you taking the time to tell your story and to tell everybody about People Proof.
Yeah, and thank you so much for having me. This
no
is a
problem.
Really
I wish you
fun
guys
opportunity.
Nothing but the best, and good luck to everything the future has in store for you.
Yeah, thank you so much. I got to decide what to wear to the show we're playing tonight.